Lenny Curry still has more than 2 years to go in his second term, but candidates to take his place at City Hall are already on the campaign trail. Good morning. We're live from Studio 5. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. Just ahead, a conversation with City Council member and now candidate for mayor, Matt Carlucci. What are your questions for him? Give us a call. It's 549-2937. Let him know how you'd like to see this city go over the next several years. Then later, it's a free presentation tonight with tips on how you can get to a zero-waste lifestyle. We'll have a preview on that. But first, the latest numbers on the coronavirus pandemic. The State Department of Health reports a total of 1,601,011 cases statewide with 142 deaths overnight. The cumulative death total in Florida now stands at 24,578. Duval is one of eight counties in the state with at least 850 resident deaths. As we've been reporting here at WJCT, the city is opening up a state-run COVID vaccination site at the Regency Mall. If you're a Florida resident 65 years or older, you need to call the number to schedule an appointment to be vaccinated there. More details on our website at wjct.org about that. All right, let's talk about city politics. Mayor Lenny Curry still has more than 2 years left on his term leading the city of Jacksonville, but contenders to replace him are already throwing their hats into the ring. Councilmember Matt Carlucci is the first high-profile name out of the gate. He has officially declared a campaign for mayor in 2023. Carlucci is calling for restoring trust and transparency to local government, and he's on the line now. Matt Carlucci, good morning.
Hey, good morning. How are you?
I'm well, and thanks for joining the show. Lots of calls already for Matt Carlucci as we talk about his campaign for mayor. What do you think should be the city's biggest priorities for the next mayor of Jacksonville? Call us now, 549-2937. Emails to firstcoastconnect at wjct.org. Tweets to at Melissa in Jax. Already have lots of those. And Facebook is open to you as well. So, Matt, you're saying you are building a campaign for mayor around four pillars: transparency, public involvement, action, and a smart and diverse team. A leadership team, you say, that will look like Jacksonville. And so tell me a little bit more about what informed your decision to throw your hat in the ring, particularly 2 years out.
Well, I was ready to run. I was ready to start a campaign. And, you know, when you make up your mind, I find it easier to be a candidate playing out than to just kind of say, well, I'm thinking about it or I'm considering it. Listen, I started out as a council member, Melissa, with no even thoughts of even running for mayor. And as time went by, and all councilmen get encouraged to run for mayor, every politician there ever was gets encouraged to run for mayor or governor or whatever. But the inordinate number of people and the people that so many people that I really respect their opinions were encouraging me. So, you know, first thing a candidate must do is get this passed with the family, make sure the family and the wife are on board. And so that's an important step. And it's not just something you have a conversation with over the table. So we worked through that, and everybody in the family is on board. My wife is working very hard for me. By the way, she is a heck of a campaigner. So she's been, you know, invaluable. But, you know, I have to say I got one or two emails in addition to some heartfelt conversations with some other people that just said, this city needs you. This is your time to help make a difference and get us back on course. And those came within a matter of
two or three days. And let me just jump in. When you say to get the city back on course, you believe that it's off course. Why?
Well, I think we need a new direction in leadership. I think the citizens just no longer really trust our leaders to make decisions in their interest. Instead, we've had policies and procedures that have been ignored. Deals done in the secret are not being shared with the council, the public. And that's the big thing is, worse, our decision makers are making decisions from a top-down type of government to the people, and sometimes they just ignore the public will. And you can't lead unless you have people behind you, and the way to get people behind you is you got to earn their trust back, and you earn their trust by listening to what they have to say, getting them engaged. Where do they want this community to go? There's some good things going on in Jacksonville, don't get me wrong, but you know, to really execute them, I've always said Jacksonville moves best when we move together, and that's best done with what I believe is a bottom-up type of leadership where you hear from the people and the mayor and the council lead from there.
When you say that our leaders and our decision makers aren't listening to voters, certainly there's been a lot of outrage over the failed attempt to sell off GEA, the Lot J deal, which you were one of seven who voted down to defeat. When you say leaders, are you referring to the current mayor, Lenny Curry?
Obviously, I think our administration has not, should never have negotiated that. The council really had a very short time to make a big decision. And I have to tell you this, I was not happy about not voting for Lot J because I like the concept. I have voted for everything for the Jaguars since I've been on the council, to bringing them to Jacksonville for the Super Bowl funding, for stadium improvements. But those kind of negotiations on those were done so differently here. And this was kind of top down. This is what we've negotiated. We want you to pass it. Well, I think the public needs to have a chance to say something about these decisions because they're costing so much money. But I would have much rather have seen some consensus built on that, some more give and take, and perhaps it would have passed. I do believe as we get into the stadium discussions, there will be time to talk about perhaps including in that an entertainment center of some sort. I do think those are important advantages for Jacksonville to have, but, you know, Lot J just didn't work out. It just didn't work
right.
out.
Right, and now the Jaguars, President Mark Lamping and owner Shad Khan say they're going to turn their attention to the Metropolitan Park parcel. They want to develop that whole area. However, we learned this week from the Jacksonville Business Journal that the National Park Service will not accept trading part of the shipyard's property for Metropolitan Park. That means Shad Khan's plans to develop on the waterfront have more hoops to jump through, quoting from the JBJ. What's your reaction to that? And if you were elected mayor, what would be your plan for downtown development?
Well, let's start with the Metropolitan Park. That is that was a promise made, and the knot was tied very tight on that promise. And I have always felt that would be a tough agreement to break with the state and the federal government that helped us with the purchase of Metropolitan Park. So that I kind of felt was going to become a reality. And what I would like to see as mayor, a Carlucci administration, I'd kind of want to just get out and have a community, an organized community conversation about downtown. There's a lot of people that have great ideas for downtown, but they don't feel like anybody is really listening to them, especially from the administration. I hate saying that, but that's just how I feel. It goes back to the landing. I didn't want the landing torn down until we knew what was going to happen with the landing. But I couldn't get anybody on board. But I think that the DIA is the best at negotiating these type of complex downtown negotiations. That's what they're there for. I think we should let them do their job. As mayor, I would want to have some input with the DIA, but I would not want to. I would not want it to be such that they couldn't have the independence that they need to make good quality decisions. I also, and I'm going to roll out more about my plans for downtown, so I can't really say all of my exact policies that I would want to institute, but in the big picture, public involvement is going to be huge in order to start to regain the trust that we need to allow us to develop downtown the way that it needs to be done. And I think when we can do it where everybody feels they're a part, we'll move together, and it will be a much better experience for everybody, and downtown will be better off for it.
Better off for it. Okay, let me ask you as a follow-up. You're running as a Republican. This is your third stint on the Jacksonville City Council as a Republican member of the council, although you say your campaign will reach out to everyone in this city. The Democratic Party didn't put up a candidate for mayor when Lenny Curry was elected last time and were roundly criticized for that. They're certain to field at least one candidate this time. It's expected to be a crowded field. Daniel Davis, who heads up the Jacksonville Chamber, is widely expected to run, widely expected to generate a lot of financial support from powerful people in this city, the group of leaders that are sometimes called the syndicate, the guys with money who try to direct how things go in the city of Jacksonville. And so what's your strategy as you get into this crowded field, particularly on the fundraising side, because that will play a role?
Well, I will tell you, my strategy is the same that I've had in sales, and that is I want to offer a good product, and I'm not going to worry about who may get in, who's in, how much somebody else may be raising. I'm sticking to my own knitting, so to speak. I got a track to run on, and I'm going to run the best campaign I have. And there are people in this community that want to give considerable dollars, and they only want it for one reason. They want what's best for Jacksonville as a whole. And as a Republican, you know, you got to be one party or the other. But I do not believe in partisan politics on the local level. And I get sometimes praised for that, and sometimes I get criticized for it. But that's just the way I feel. I feel the mayor and the city councilman, and particularly serving as a councilman at large, this will be my 12th year of serving as a councilman at large. So I've served the whole community, and I know how important it is to reach out to everybody, Democrat, Republican. There's a lot of NPAs out there, a lot of independents. But I think all of these folks on local government, local initiatives, quality of life for our local city can rally around those together. So I don't believe in partisan politics on the local level. I will have an administration that is going to look like Jacksonville. That's my goal, and I'm already working on that. And having so far a really great success.
All right. Let me, if I could, get a lot of callers in the queue waiting online. We are speaking now with Matt Carlucci, candidate for mayor. He is in the midst of his third stint on the Jacksonville City Council. 549-2937. Andrew in Riverside. Hi, Andrew.
Hi. Good morning, Melissa. Good morning, Councilman. How y'all doing?
All right. Go ahead.
Good morning.
Hey, good morning, Councilman. Just wanted to start off saying that I'm really excited that you're running for mayor. My family is too. I have a lot of friends. We're looking forward to you hopefully taking the helm in 2023. But my kind of big question is every mayor, you know, Mayor Curry had the pension reform. We had Delaney and Payton had their Jacksonville plan. What is your major policy initiative that you want to start and get accomplished in your first term if you're elected as mayor? All right, thank you.
All right. What would be your biggest priority in a first term?
You know what my biggest priority is going to be is in some organized way. This has been done before by previous mayors. Ed Austin comes to mind, but it was very progressive. And that was he had a community conversations that were organized. And I think public input, public involvement, is huge in gaining the trust of our citizens that we care of what they think. And they'll talk about everything that I'm interested in, but give us great ideas. We'll be able to drill down better on our priorities. But infrastructure is going to be hugely important. Drainage, particularly in the older urban core, septic tank remediation, that's a big one. And when I talk about drainage, that also kind of hooks into resiliency. So these are real important issues right there. Also,
what if I've got to ask, how would you reallocate city dollars toward remedying these glaring infrastructure problems across town, particularly in the older and urban core and majority African-American neighborhoods?
Right. Let me, if you don't mind, let me keep going. I'm not going to try to avoid that question. But I want to try to set the stage of what I believe the next mayor is going to be looking at. The mayor is going to still be facing this crime issue, and we are going to have to address that in a different way. And so infrastructure, we'll have to look and find ways to generate more jobs, particularly in the communities that need more jobs, need to understand how they can develop their own businesses. And there are some programs out there that are helping with that, but we've got to do more. We've got to have quality of life issues. I mean, that boils right down to library hours, our parks better maintained. These are all the kind of things, downtown development. And we got to keep the Jaguars here in Jacksonville. We're going to have to do our best to negotiate a new stadium or stadium renovations. So there's there's going to be a lot on the next mayor's plate. And so, you know, how we get all that done, the first thing we'll do is dig into the administration as we receive it and see what can be done more efficiently, what kind of dollars we can find that can be freed up. We'll look for our ability to do any bonding without using up our bonding capacity. And if there has to be some type of new fee or revenue or tax, whatever you want to call it, then I think the people,
let me just ask you, that's really at the heart of all of this. I mean, certainly the push to sell JEA, some observers have said, was because the current mayor didn't want to raise taxes, but the city needs revenue. And so how would you be open to, say, a millage rate increase for all of these glaring problems in this very lightly taxed city, which is really creaking under the strain of not enough revenue for all of the things that need done?
Okay, so here's what I'm trying to say. Before I start anything, I want to look through what I received as the mayor of Jacksonville from the previous administration, what dollars can be used and leveraged, what can be done more efficiently to help leverage those dollars. You have to do that before you go to looking for additional revenue. Also, you've got to regain the trust of this community. I think people will chip in a little, regardless of what kind of fee or tax it is, all the way across the board. I'm not going to say which fee or tax that might become available, but we can't keep rubbing the same nickel together expecting to grow. We have to invest in our city. I'm big on investing with Jacksonville, but people will chip in a little more, but they've got to have trust in what the mayor and what the council is trying to accomplish to make the city better. And if they buy in on that, they'll chip in more for that. That's really the key. You got to have a plan. People have to believe in it. And you can't just say, this is the plan, and that's it. That's why I like the bottom-up approach. You listen to the public, get the public involved. There's so many people that want to become involved, especially a lot of young professionals. I hear that all the time from young professionals, all the way up the gamut to our seniors. And so if you can get them involved, and they will buy into the things that are really necessary. I think our community has a little bit of a slant on wanting to go back and take care of our urban core, create more job opportunities. I really think that's a big issue for everybody in Jacksonville. I really do.
And let me just say, lots of calls waiting online. If I could get a few more on for you, for Council Member Matt Carlucci, the first officially declared candidate for mayor in Jacksonville in 2023. Carlucci is a Republican from San Marco, a State Farm insurance business owner, and he's in the midst of his third stint on the Jacksonville City Council with a long tenure in local government. 549-2937, Cynthia in Lakeshore. Hi, Cynthia.
Good morning, Melissa, and good morning, Matt. I'm so glad that you are considering voting, you know, running for mayor.
You
mentioned something about Metro Park, and what would we like to be as a city? I would like to be a city that thinks promises mean something. Keeping promises is an important aspect of what your character is. And to completely ignore the fact that we have had the privilege of having this park because we promised to make it a park in perpetuity. We were given a large sum of money to be able, for that time, 40 years ago, $1.7 million. It would be much more today. And we have kept the park closed for 3 years. It needs to be opened back up and kept as a park, as we promised.
All absolutely. Right. I so miss, like, the Spring Music Fest, and we had the Jazz Festival there, and then the Starry Nights, Starry Nights musicals there with different artists that would come, and you know, James Taylor, Aretha Franklin. I mean, we had so many people come back in those days, and that's a part of our celebration that has kind of gone lost on us. And we can begin to have fun in downtown again. And this is why your opinion matters, because what you just said reflects what a lot of people in Jacksonville says, and that is a promise, but Metropolitan Park is now kind of up in the air. Everything seems up the, it seems like we go from, and I just don't know any way to put it, but it seems like we go from one ditch to another ditch to another ditch, and every issue is packed with drama, and the public seems to be left out. And it's just time we get out of the ditch and put the public back in and take the drama out. And we can find our way. We can find our direction. Now, listen, not everybody's going to get what they want when they get involved, but at least they'll feel involved. And a lot of people that make suggestions will see their suggestions come to fruition.
Sorry to keep cutting you off. Just so many people weighing in on social media and with calls. Lots of tweets. Speaking of getting the public involved, just want to keep the interactivity going. Here is a tweet for you. The budget for the sheriff's office keeps increasing, yet the crime rate also keeps increasing, and the department pushes back on reform measures. Will you be a status quo guy? Referring to Jacksonville's big problem with homicides and violent crime. What about that?
Well, I think that, but first of all, I'm not going to go into defunding the police. I think that sends out a message that that it scares people. I will always make sure that the sheriff, whoever that person may be, he or she, has the tools necessary for the enforcement part of the job. But I will say this. I will, not at the expense of the sheriff's office, but I will make sure that we are putting more dollars into prevention and intervention. The sheriff can't handle the crime issue all on his own. We have got to invest more in prevention and intervention programs that work, and I know some that work, and I'll be putting together a good package with the talented people I'll have around
me. Would it be a bit of a revival of a Jacksonville Journey type initiative?
I would go to, and I'm not trying to use his name because I'm not sure who John Payton would support, and people that support me or don't support me.
Former mayor, Jacksonville Journey creator, yeah.
Yeah, but I would definitely go back to John Delaney and ask him how
another
he put
former
that
mayor.
Yes, a former mayor. And by the way, I will leverage the former mayor's experiences in order to help me become the best mayor that I can be. But we are going to put more money into prevention and intervention. It's called PIE, P-I-E, prevention, intervention, and enforcement. But we have got to intercept these at-risk kids. They're all colors, they're all creeds, whatever. Got to intercept them before they keep going down the pike in making decisions that will be life-altering to them. I'd rather give them opportunities to alter their lives so they can really build their world of tomorrow. So we're going to put a lot more emphasis. I passed the bill yesterday. I was very thankful because this was kind of the campaign promise, was to put more money into intervention. And we passed $140,000 to hire more caseworkers for teen court, which is an excellent program. It works. There's not a big rate of recidivism of the kids that go through that. Helps give kids a second chance. And you know what? I'm for second chances. I'm for third chances if people are willing. And I got to tell you, we've got to do things in such a way, you can't legislate it, but all of our moms and all of our dads have got to, you know, really make sure where their kids are and engage with their kids. Maybe we need more opportunities for Little League baseball or soccer, whatever the sport is that band, art. Children need the things that they become interested in. We need to compound that
lots more questions. Here's another tweet from a listener. How will Carlucci work with the city's new chief resiliency officer to address Jacksonville's environmental inequities? You mentioned a minute ago dealing with infrastructure, flooding, drainage, the threat of a warming planet, and how that's going to impact this city. What about resiliency?
Well, I was the one that brought resiliency to the table with the Chief Resiliency Special Committee on Resiliency. I made a promise at our first meeting we would hire our first Chief Resiliency Officer. We will be doing that within the next 3 months or so. Randy DeFore, Councilmember DeFore, is now the chairperson, and I'm still on the committee. I would leverage that person's ability. I would empower that person to be able to make the suggestions and policy changes that are needed in order to make our city more resilient. And by the way, in the Special Committee on Resiliency, we gave the public the ability to have input by creating three special subcommittees made up of subject experts. And these are folks that are young, a little older, but they have a lot of expertise in this. So I will fully empower the Chief Resiliency Officer to make the changes necessary. This is the big issue about making Jacksonville safe and resilient for our future generation.
Okay. Let me get one more question in for you. It's Mitchell on the line in Avondale. Mitch, you're on the air.
Hi. I would like to ask, how do we deal with the lack of public transportation here in Jacksonville, especially with the lack of a monorail system or an effective bus system for people that don't have a car or want to travel around the city without a car?
Thanks, Mitch. Matt.
That's a great question, and that is a problem, particularly people that live on the outskirts that need to get in to where maybe they can get a job and maybe they don't have a car. And that's a big issue on my radar screen. I have some ideas about it, but I am still fleshing out a lot of that. I apologize for not being as informative as perhaps you would want me to be. But I will always say this. I never really supported the people mover, and I used to take heck out of that. Listen, this is my fourth term, by the way, Melissa.
Oh,
back in
I stand corrected. I thought you were in your third. Third time on the council. Yeah.
I'm my fourth. But the people mover, it was a good idea. I believe that the purity of the idea that, you know, started it. But the one thing I didn't like about it, number one, was the cost. But number two, it put people up above the sidewalks. And we want people walking on sidewalks to hopefully attract people more to maybe some of the retail stores around there. And so a more efficient bus system, maybe smaller buses that are quicker, more nimble, would be a good idea. They talk about now bringing the people mover down and to the ground, so these automated driverless vehicles would actually be kind of sloped down from up above onto the street. That might be a thought. However, when you want to walk one downtown, you don't want to put up something that, you know, will transport people and they never get a chance to really see what downtown's going to look like. And by the way, downtown, the core is going to be so beautiful after some of these historical buildings are restored, people are going to want to be downtown. And there's going to be a lot of great things happening there. So I know that's not all you need to know, but that's some general thoughts.
General thoughts, and with more than 2 years to go, there will be a lot to cover leading up to 2023. So I want to thank you for appearing. He's Matt Carlucci, member of the City Council at Large and candidate for mayor. Thanks so much.
Hey, I so thank you for involving me this morning, and I wish all your listeners a beautiful day, and I guess we got a weekend coming up here before long. So anyway, I always appreciate Melissa, you asking me to be on when I can, and I thank your listeners for kindly tuning in.
Thanks so much. And again, Carlucci, the first major candidate to declare. There will certainly be more, and we will bring their platforms to you as well. Much more coming up, meanwhile. Later, the beautiful noise of Northeast Florida. It's this month's Audio Void. We'll take a listen. But up next.
Zero waste really means for lifestyle, living in a way that doesn't create much waste at all.
Seem overwhelming? There is a way to get to a zero-waste lifestyle. We'll tell you about tonight's free presentation. That's after this. Well, there is a free virtual presentation tonight on Zoom that you can check out with tips on how to achieve a zero-waste lifestyle. It is possible. Now, this comes courtesy of North Florida's Sierra Club. I got a preview from Amanda Rice Waddle. She leads Zero Waste Gainesville. Hey, Amanda, good to talk to you. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
So you're giving a virtual presentation tonight on zero waste and what that means. What is zero waste? How do we define that as a lifestyle and as a concept?
Yes. Zero waste really means for lifestyle, living in a way that doesn't create much waste at all. So it really embraces reuse a lot, eliminating items that can't be recycled or composted. And there is actually a definition of zero waste put out by the Zero Waste International Alliance that communities and businesses follow that official definition.
Now, you lead the zero waste group in Gainesville to our west. So you're going to be talking about the work you're doing in that community and how more people here in Jacksonville can learn about these practices, help mitigate climate change. You know, this is something I think most people want to try to do, but it's easier said than done. What advice do you have for people who just feel overwhelmed by this? Because I think most people listening to this right now, and I include myself among them, generate a lot more trash than we'd like.
Yes. So in Gainesville, we have a community group, Zero Waste Gainesville. So there are three of us that volunteer to lead that group. And I also work professionally as a Zero Waste professional through my job with the Repurpose Project and Zero Waste USA. And what we tell people through all of those avenues of the zero waste work I do is any amount of waste you can reduce is a success. So it's more about the journey than the destination. So not to get hung up on the thought is so overwhelming to not actually ever have to throw anything away. That's really what we don't want people to focus on. But little and small everyday changes that can help you reduce waste are really good. And some of those are using reusables, like a reusable water bottle, reusable cloth bags, just saying no thank you to unnecessary things. Like, if you don't actually need a plastic straw, just say no thank you. There is a difference if you actually do need one, and that's understandable. Mm-hmm. Other things that help mitigate climate change with a zero-waste lifestyle is just buying less stuff, consuming less stuff, really only buying what you need, and also buying used. We have a great used market locally, and buying used clothes, used household items, just trying to keep resources in use is what zero waste is all about.
Now, people can learn more at your presentation on Zoom.
tonight. How can people find this and join virtually?
Yeah, if they go to Sierra Club's Florida page, that's sierraclub.org/Florida, there, right on the front page, there's a little blurb about it with a link to join the Zoom presentation.
Okay, so that
and we
is...
we also want to mention that this presentation is focused on the Florida Sierra Club campaign called Stop Using Plastic Bags Publix. So avoiding plastics, especially single-use plastic, is part of zero waste, and that's one reason why we're talking about zero waste with this petition. Again, that's called Stop Using Plastic Bags Publix, and that's an addup.org petition that you guys can sign.
People can sign that petition. Look for that online. Visit the Sierra Club Florida's website. Click onto the Zoom tonight to learn about a zero-waste lifestyle. Amanda Rice Waddle of Zero Waste Gainesville. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Well, do you have a talented young budding author in your house? You need to encourage them to enter the WJCT PBS Kids Writers Contest, happening now. Cersei Lenoble, WJCT's Grants and Education Outreach Manager, is on the line now to tell us more. Hey, Cersei.
Hey, Melissa. How are you?
I'm great. Good to hear your voice. Of course, almost all of us here at WJCT have been working virtually for almost a year, so haven't seen you in quite some time, but it's good to hear your voice. Tell us about the WJCT PBS Kids Writers Contest.
Well, it was a year ago that in March when we stopped coming into the office that I was wrapping up the writers' contest and judging and everything. So it's kind of deja vu. But the writers' contest started in 1994 with the Reading Rainbow writers' contest. And PBS sponsored it for a long time, but then they lost funding. And so we have continued it for 27 years now at WJCT, and it's open to any student, kindergarten through third grade, to send us their best stories, and we publish them online for everybody to read. They're so much fun. It's my favorite time of year.
Yeah,
is to get these stories and be able to read them.
And their illustrations too, right?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. We want them to write them and illustrate their stories and submit them to us, and we find some judges. A lot of times it's, you know, my mom reads every story and judges them, and we have community partners who help us judge them, and then we pick some winners.
That's so great, because, of course, it's exciting for the kids to win, but this initiative is really also to promote children's literacy skills.
Number one, absolutely. We want the children to practice as much as they can, and it's really something special to write a book and then have your book published, because like I said, we do post every story online. And I actually wrote a book back in the day when I was in elementary school, and we bound it and had it hard copy, and I still have that book about Sammy the Seal. It was about stopping seal hunting, you know, and that sticks with me. And so we hope this is something that really resonates with the kids and helps them develop their literacy skills.
And the kids get their story posted on our website. They get a certificate. Winners get a WJCT PBS Kids prize pack. They get to share their story live at our Be My Neighbor Day, which is coming up in May. There's lots of prizes, lots of fun with this.
Absolutely. Lots of opportunities to be recognized. And the Be My Neighbor Day, keep our fingers crossed, will happen in person this year.
Yeah.
Like you said, it's usually Mother's Day weekend, the Saturday of Mother's Day. but yeah, we give them a lot of opportunities to engage with their writing. And that's another important component, is sharing their writing verbally and reading it out loud for an audience and fun stuff like that.
And, you know, for school children who've been through so much in this pandemic, and their parents and teachers too, this is a really nice creative outlet, I think, after a difficult time as well. Something that they can do just for fun.
Absolutely. And it hasn't been impacted by COVID. We are doing it exactly the way we've done it for the last 5 years. We've, you know, recently added the publishing online, but it's still print. They still write them. They still send them in hard copy. You know, we scan them and upload them, but it hasn't been changed by COVID and the situation we're in right now. So that's something that I've actually thought about and thought was, you know, important and special about this.
We're speaking with WJCT Circe Lenoble as WJCT Public Media is asking for entries for our 2021 WJCT PBS Kids Writers Contest. We're accepting entries from kids in grades K through 3 all the way through March 15th. Now, Circe, people can look for this at WJCT.org/writers contest. What else do they need to know to enter?
Right on that web page, there are two forms they need to download. One is an entry form, which is giving us permission to publish and all the information we need to keep in contact, and then one is the rules. So there's very concrete rules and descriptions of what you need to enter. And then also there's some resources on that web page to help parents or teachers help their students get started in the writing process. We have PBS resources to help them figure out how to write a book.
Yeah. So check it out. Go to WJCT.org/writers contest. If you have a child at home, grades kindergarten through third, who you think might enjoy this, have them write an original story and they can add their own illustrations and submit it to the 2021 WJCT PBS Kids Writers Contest. We are accepting entries through March 15th. Again, WJCT.org/writers contest. Leading it all is the great Circe Lenoble. Circe, thank you so much, and I look forward to seeing you in person sometime this year.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you so much, Melissa.
Thank you. A quick break, and in a moment, it's this month's Audio Void as we speak with Void Magazine, and they bring us the beautiful noise of Northeast Florida, this area's most talented local musicians. We'll take a listen to some great tracks next. Keep listening here on WJCT First Coast Connect. It's the biggest stories affecting the Sunshine State. Hi, I'm Melissa Ross.
And I'm Tom Hudson. Join us Friday for the Florida Roundup.
Each week at noon, we interview newsmakers and people from across the state discussing the stories and issues that affect your life. What's driving the conversation in Florida?
Join the conversation on the Florida Roundup.
Every Friday at noon on WJCT News 89.9.
Edible Northeast Florida Magazine tells the story of local food through the lens of restaurants, farms, and contributors within the community. Find these stories, recipes, and more inside the latest issue. Eat, drink, think, explore season by season with Edible Northeast Florida Magazine.
Announcing Vickers Landing at Oak Bridge, bridging retirees with an all-new Ponte Vedra Beach community featuring new homes, a resort lifestyle, and services tailored for active retirees. Information at VickersLanding.com.
It's the biggest stories affecting the Sunshine State. Hi, I'm Melissa Ross.
And I'm Tom Hudson. Join us Friday for the Florida Roundup.
Each week at noon, we interview newsmakers and people from across the state discussing the stories and issues that affect your life. What's driving the conversation in Florida?
Join the conversation on the Florida Roundup.
Every Friday at noon on WJCT News 89.9. Many of us have struggled to understand how and why so many of our fellow Americans have come to believe the conspiracy theories attributed to the mysterious Q. Reed Berkowitz is a game designer, and he joins us to talk about how QAnon could be thought of as a game that plays people. That's next time on Think. Tonight at 10 on WJCT News 89.9.
The challenges faced by Joe Biden are daunting. Street protests, devastating wildfires, and a global pandemic that's killed 400,000 and caused the biggest economic crisis since the Great Depression. Now that he's taken the oath of office, what do we know about the new president's priorities? I'm Jen White. That's next time on 1A.
Today, starting at 10 on WJCT News 89.9.
Welcome back. Well, the musical talent at the Jack's Beaches continues to produce some of the city's most distinctive sounds. Void magazine editor Matt Shaw is here to help us take a listen. It's this month's Audio Void. Hey, Matt.
Hi, Melissa. Thanks for having me.
We're so pleased to present Audio Void every month. It's brought to you by Void magazine, and it's also part of our Jacksonville music experience. We're going to begin with Seagate. Tell us about this song.
Oh, yeah. So Seagate is a young indie rock group and as their name references, a street in Neptune Beach. But if you listen to their new song called Dog Days, it sounds like they come straight out of early 80s Manchester in the United Kingdom. That is to say, they sound a lot like the Smiths. So, yeah, let's start with Seagate.
That's nice. So early 80s new wave is new again, I guess.
Yeah, that's the new wave of Jax's indie rock scene. But next I wanted to listen to a guy who's been around for a while. He goes by the name of Rickolas. That's Rick Collado, and he's well known in the Jack music community. He was front person for a band called Julius Airwave in the late 90s. He has a long catalog of tunes under that Rickolas moniker, and he's got a new album coming out in March called Bones. And the first song that he's released from that is called Four-Track Love Song. The whole album chronicles his youth growing up in Jacksonville Beach, so I thought it was a nice addition to this playlist today. So let's listen to Four-Track Love Song. The words are never wrong. All we wanted was to show you how it feels.
All right, that's Rickolas. And last but not least, Matt, you want to spin LPT. Jacksonville's Afro-Cuban salsa standouts.
Yeah, they kind of came to prominence playing at Rain Dogs in the back room around 2015. 2020, they released a full-length called Sin Parar. It earned two independent music awards, and pertinent to this segment, the frontman, Josue Cruz, is my neighbor in Atlantic Beach. Mm. So let's listen to Los Bravos. No van a avanzar. Te negamos convicción de corazón. Un entierro y tú sin velar. Y velará que el que pide un poco de canto, dos tazas le da. Amazing. And as you said, they've won two independent music awards for Best Latin Album, Best Latin Song from right out of the beaches, LPT.
And all of this as well inside the pages of Void magazine, right?
Always. Yep. New music, every issue, and always on our website, voidlive.com. Anything new that comes out, we're pretty much covering it. So
much musical talent right here in this community. Matt Shaw, editor at Void magazine. Pick up one today. Thank you so, Matt. So much, Matt.
Thanks, Melissa. Thank you.
We'll close with Los Bravos from Jacksonville Beach's own, or I should say Atlantic Beach's own, LPT. Enjoy, everybody. And that's our show. Thanks to producer Heather Schatz, director Josh Torres, news director Jessica Palumbo, and digital editor Bill Bortsfield. And I'm Melissa Ross. We'll be back at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Here's some music to get you going.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.